I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I'm Mike Lupica, MSNBC and MLB.com. And welcome to the Friday morning edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Mr. Ryan is traveling, and so it will be Mr. Albom and I today. And before we start, we got so much to talk about today, especially starting with Zion Williamson. Our business lost one of the best people to ever inhabit our world, in the world of the press box, in the world of baseball, yesterday. Nick Cafardo, the fine baseball columnist, national baseball columnist for the Boston Globe, on a day when he wasn't even supposed to be working in Fort Myers, dropped dead outside the Red Sox clubhouse. He was 62 years old, a father, a grandfather, and a gentleman. And Mitch, you know this. The guys who cover baseball, who still cover baseball for newspapers, it is such a hard job. The hours are ridiculous. It seems like they're writing all day long. And this man, for the last 15 years, writing a spectacular Sunday Notes column that was originated by Peter Gammons back in the 1970s, I believe, what was a figure of grace and hard work and professionalism. He was a wonderful writer, and he was a wonderful guy. And I was saying to Lou Pellegrino, our producer, Mitch, before we started today, I happened to be on Twitter early yesterday afternoon, and you never want to see somebody's picture, you know, with any kind of headline. And I realized something terrible had happened, and I didn't know how terrible it was. And oh my God, I so many spring training days with him, so many Fenway Park days and nights, and World Series days and night. To quote something Pete Hamill said about somebody else, it's like 10 guys left the room yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sad news, and way too young. And you're absolutely right about baseball writers. They're the last vestige of what it used to mean to be a sports writer, because you can't fake it. You have to be there every day. You got to cover all these games. There's lots of ways to cover the NFL these days. Once a week performance. There's a lot of ways to cover the NBA. Don't go on the road with them. Stay at home, et cetera. If the team's no good, don't cover it. But baseball is still the nickname Seamheads, which is the industry nickname for guys who cover baseball like him. They're the most dedicated of all of us, and the most thankless job, if you ask me, of all of us. 162 games, spring training, Grapefruit League stuff, and off-season stuff. It never ends. So, we can only hope that that was what he loved the most in life and was doing it when his life came to an end.
And but, Mitch, thanks for bringing that up. When his kid, he's got a son, Ben, who works at ESPN, and when his children were younger, he switched over to the Patriots just because, as you know, it's covering pro football is a much more sensible lifestyle. And then when the kids were older, he wanted to go back to baseball, his first love. And again, for the last 15 years, he has been doing this kind of work superbly for the Boston Globe, and didn't everybody like Nick. I saw him referred to as Saint Nick yesterday, and it was a shocking, sad day in our world. So anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge the passing of a great member of our fraternity. And now, Mitch, I'm kicking back the other night. I don't know how often you do this during the college basketball season, but I actually felt like it was appointment television the other night. Duke, yep. Carolina, me, Barack,
Barack was he with a better seat than you, apparently.
My seat was fine. Don't worry about where my seat was. But
it was at home.
And then all of a sudden, everybody's seen it by now, Mr. President Obama saying, his shoe broke.
Yeah, it doesn't help when one of the more credible people in recent history declares that it was the shoe. As Spike Lee once said, is it the shoes? Is it the shoes? Is the shoe? Well, yeah, it apparently was the shoe. It was a freak. I mean, the way that Zion Williamson positioned himself, the cut that he made, it was a freak thing. Even if the shoe didn't blow out, it might have been something that rolled an ankle or whatever. But the shoe did blow out, and it's one of those things that it's not Joe Theismann, but it's cringing to watch. And I thought, wow, he could be out for a long time. Now, it is only a testament to the young bodies that are playing college basketball. An 18-year-old body is not a 28-year-old body. A 28-year-old body probably be out for 6 months. The fact that this is classified as a sprain mild knee sprain. There was nothing mild about that.
Isn't that like minor surgery?
Yeah,
isn't minor surgery something that happens to somebody else?
Yeah. Mild knee sprain is when somebody else blows out their shoe. But it has engendered some interesting talk. Some of which has to do with the shoe company and their stock dropping 1% based on that, and a lot of which has to do with this debate. I think an artificial one about should Zion Williamson now consider shutting it down for his college basketball career. He's done. You know, I've played enough college basketball, saved myself for the NBA draft. And there are a lot of people who very seriously, most of them professionals, who very seriously suggest that he should, that, you're there at college to just give them a little peek. He gave them more than a peek. He's probably going to be the number one pick in the draft. And that's enough. I disagree, and I know that you disagree too.
Yeah, there was a rush, and you know, I'm sure you saw it on social media. Shut it down. That was one chorus the other night. And you know, listen, I've always said that these young men are the ones filling the arenas, and they ought to get some sort of substantial compensation for doing that. And I always freely admit, Mitch knows this. We've talked about this for 25 years. I don't have a plan to do it. Okay, I just think it's unjust. But the other thing was, this shows that they should be paid. But Mitch, I said to you before, what amount of compensation would have taken care of Zion Williamson if he'd done something terrible to his knee the other night? You know, right. We ought to be paying. Okay, how much money if it had been a career-ending injury, which happened in sports? How much money would he have had to be making from Duke to make it all worthwhile? There's not enough money, right?
Right, right. Well, they're saying that his shoe contract could be worth $100 million, so I guess you'd have to start there. You have to say, well, okay, we got to begin by giving him $100 million because he's not going to get that now to go pro. It's a joke to think that there's any money that would have made a difference. A bigger debate is, okay, you're injured now. Do you risk coming back at the most important part of a season because you could hurt that knee again? Now, to me, this is part of your pedigree as an athlete. Everybody seems to think that all you have to do is take a healthy body into the NBA. It's a lot more than the body. It's the mind. Yep. It's the mindset. It's the competitive instincts that you have. If your competitive instincts allow you to say, I don't need to be here. I got bigger fish to fry. When you are on the cusp of perhaps leading your team to an NCAA championship. Remember, he's not playing for Furman here. He's playing for Duke. Him being on the court is critical to their success. Witness how lost they looked when they played North Carolina. Right. There were so many points in the paint, I thought I could drive down there and get a layup because suddenly he wasn't there. So he is the critical linchpin for them to win a championship. And if he develops an early habit of saying, doesn't matter about championships, doesn't matter about team, what matters is me and my investment in myself, do not think that that attitude will not follow him into the pros. And if he's on an NBA team that doesn't look like it's going to get more than an eighth seed in the playoff or might miss the playoffs and he tweaks something, you know what? Got to preserve myself. And the same pattern can repeat itself. You train your mind as much as you train your body. And if he really wants to be exemplary as an athlete and go down in history as he probably plans to be as a great NBA player, he better think about the competitive mindset that he's going to need. And a competitive mindset is not served by if he's day-to-day right now, which means that, you know, in theory, he could certainly be back for the tournament, and he decides enough already on this. This is a seminal decision in his career, and the people advising him better think about the future as well as just right now.
Okay, let me ask you this, because I agree with you, and I think he ought to play, and I think that he has to take a step back now, or limp back at this point, and look at why he has become the most dynamic player. Mitch, I can't think of the last time, I'm sure I'm blanking on somebody, who has drawn this kind of attention. I know Cal's had a bunch of one and dones. I know that there have been other exciting freshmen in college basketball. There hasn't been one like this young man lately. And in a lot of ways, because of where he plays and because of the style with which he plays the game and because of the dunks, maybe there hasn't ever been a guy who's branded himself this quickly the way Zion Williamson's had. But let me ask you this. If he did shut it down, how different would that be from star college football players who elect not to play bowl games?
It would be quite different, and here's why. He has a chance to win a national championship.
You were pointing out that Coach K hasn't actually won as many lately.
That's right. Well, that's another thing, you know. But missing a bowl game, first of all, bowl games are uniquely positioned. You have to play a football game full out after you haven't played a football game in 4 or 5 weeks. And with the exception of the college football playoff, it's meaningless. Meaningless. If Duke was out of it, you know, that they were having a 12-20 season, they weren't going to make the tournament, then, you know, you have a much stronger argument to say, okay, well, you know, there's nothing really on the line here. But there is. There's everything on the line here. There's the whole reason you go to college, presumably. The biggest prize that there is on the line. And if he walks away from that prize saying, well, you know, there's a much bigger prize and that's my paycheck, he is establishing a pattern that is going to repeat itself later in life. So it's not even close to the bowl game situation in my mind, because bowl games are, you can make an argument they shouldn't exist to begin with. But you can't really make an argument that the NCAA tournament shouldn't exist, because it's the pinnacle of the NCAA season.
Mitch, I don't know if you saw this the other day, but Isaiah Thomas, not your close personal friend, Isaiah Thomas of the Bad Boy Pistons, Isaiah Thomas, who is now playing with the Denver Nuggets. It's interesting that this is coming from him, because he saw how an injury has altered his career when he was on the verge, if not a max contract, but a pretty big contract. He said, Zion, sit your ass down, LOL, and we will be ready for you in the big boy league. Okay. But Mitch, you know, I mean, we've been talking about this today. That was a prevailing opinion after the shoe exploded the other night.
Prevailing opinion from guys in the league who don't have much love lost for the NCAA. And again, most guys in the league did not play for Duke and did not have a shot at a national championship when they were in college. I think the guys who experienced that, went to an NCAA Final Four, they're probably not the guys who are going to be out there saying, you know, walk away from this, it's totally unimportant. The guys who did one and done or came out of schools that really weren't factors in the tournament, maybe they do, and then they're using their own life experience. All I'm saying is, at some point you play basketball again. If you're at some point, as let's say this was just a regular injury, all right? It wasn't highlight film injury. It was, you know, hey, oh, he just pulled up a little bit. What happened there? Didn't see anything happen, but he's got a mild knee sprain. Would anybody be saying he should shut it down? The only reason they're saying this is because there's tape that makes it look like a horrific injury, and everyone say, well, you can't risk something with that. But everybody's playing doctor here. And, Mike, I mean, let's not bury the obvious. He should never set foot near the court unless every single doctor has cleared him. That, right. that goes without question. He shouldn't be telling doctors, I don't care what you say, I'm getting back out there. That's stupid from a personal point of view, a health point of view, and irresponsible from the university's point of view. But let's be honest, if he just tweaked his knee in some move that, you know, nobody could feel except him, we wouldn't be having this debate. This, once more, like, honestly, Mike, this is increasingly the justification for stories in every walk of journalism, is predicated by a piece of tape, a piece of video. If you don't have the video, the story isn't the same. I could use that sentence for all kinds of things in the world today. And this is based off of a horrific little piece of video that everybody's reacting to. So to sum it up, I think both of us agree, if he's healthy, there's no reason he shouldn't play. You know, if it really is just, okay, he's better. It was a mild knee sprain and he's better. Stop thinking about blown out shoes. Nike is another story. You know, like Paul George, it's his shoe. Poor guy.
Oh my God.
What did he do? You know, now all of a sudden they're going to see his shoe sales go down. I mean, how many people are going to go buy that particular brand of shoe if they're serious about their game? I don't know what happened. It was... You know, I don't
it
like
Nike. It was really a bizarre... It was, again...
But I'm not going to blame Nike inferior
Mitch,
products.
Think
you know.
About it. How about those pieces of tape we've seen across baseball history where a guy checks his swing and he's so strong the bat breaks. And right. I'm thinking, does everybody say Louisville Slugger should get out of the baseball bat business?
It was just freak. You know, that in some ways it speaks to how strong Zion Williamson probably is, and the weight of that body going in the wrong direction. They should turn it to their advantage for him. You know, strong enough to break a Nike shoe. Yeah.
But here's the thing about this young man, and we're in the same lane on this. But I respect people who are telling him to shut it down. In a lot of ways, this he's going to feel like. There may have been more talented players since LeBron came out of high school and went to the NBA, but don't you agree that there is that sense that this is the most dynamic talent to come into the league since him? I don't know if he's going to be.
He's been anointed that way. You're absolutely correct.
And I think you enhance that by playing now. And if you come back and you lead your team to a national championship, I think that only enhances the brand that this young man has built up already.
Well, the fact that you have to say that, Mike, speaks to the fact that everybody in starting in high school is just thinking about an NBA paycheck. Because once upon a time, a college basketball championship was a goal that was worth itself by itself.
Right?
Now you barely hear anybody talking about that. Shut it down. Save yourself. Nobody says, wait a minute, these guys are en route to a college championship. How many players in the world get to say they won the NCAA tournament? 15 a year? And they're so quick to walk away from it. So it just speaks to this. But by the way, and this is an interesting segue into this, if this happened in 2022, it's quite likely that this would have been on an NBA court because they're putting out that I think is going to be accepted. The NBA and the Players Union are now getting together on a proposal to lower the draft age to 18. And by lowering the draft age to 18, you know what that means. Straight from high school into the NBA. And a guy like Zion Williamson, who was spotted long before he went to Duke, would be a prime candidate to skip college altogether and be in the NBA already. And maybe that's the ultimate answer for this thing. And maybe, you know, we're not going to have this debate because guys like him, the elite 8, 10, 12 players a year that could make it from high school straight into the pros are going to be in the pros. What, though, my question to you, Mike Lupica, is what does that portend for the college basketball game? Because while this decision is being made by the NBA and its players union, the biggest affected party is college basketball.
Yep. And here's Coach K, and you know, Mitch, we've had this conversation for a while now. You know, in front of our eyes, you know, you remember the time when Duke was four-year players and this and that and the other thing. And all of a sudden, Coach K came along, and now he's like trying to beat Coach Cal in his own one-and-done game, okay? And why? Because that's the way the wind was blowing in college basketball. And the Jay Wrights and the veteran players that Villanova had, you know, that's unusual. I mean, Jay Wright, in so many ways, don't you agree, Mitch, has been swimming against the current and showing that he could win a college basketball national championship.
Well, look at that North Carolina team they played the other day. They had a bunch
four
of seniors,
right?
Yeah. I haven't seen that since 1972. So, but what does this do now, Mike? So here's my question to you. If you allow the premier...
I was thinking about this, Mitch. How many guys are there going to be every year?
Well, maybe a dozen. That's the max to me because you really don't get to see them do anything other than play against inferior high school talent. Now, the combines and things like that are going to start to become what they are in the NFL, you know, where a guy who only has a mild reputation coming in performs amazingly at these combine skill things and suddenly shoots up to a lottery pick. And that's going to have to be the case because, let's face it, you and I have both seen it. Like, watching Chris Webber play in high school
against the competition that he was up against. He was in a private school league. It was ridiculous. You couldn't judge anything. You know, he could score 50 points any night he wanted to. He could get 25 rebounds anytime he wanted to. You never got a chance to really see him against real competition. And right. That's going to be a challenge to draft an 18-year-old now. On the other hand, they do it from Europe. And they've scouted these guys before, and they come into the to college basketball, and they only play 1 year anyhow. So my guess is it's probably going to be a dozen guys, but those dozen guys are the game changers in college basketball. Right. So I think it could be a blessing in disguise for college basketball coaches who don't all have to chase a Zion Williamson because they know we're never getting him.
He's going
and the other 11 guys. And then they maybe can build a team of guys who are really, really good, but not necessarily already in the NBA, even when they show up for freshman year. And maybe you end up keeping guys more close to a sophomore year or junior year instead of all the one and done.
I also don't think it's going to help the NBA that much, Mitch. I actually think that, you know, we can have the debate about whether they're really part of the college experience by being on campus for 5 or 6 months, or, you know, they check out as students the minute they finish the NCAA tournament. Okay. Right. I don't think the NBA is going to be particularly well served about this, but I think that they could. It was like trying to stop the ocean after a while. They just couldn't keep. I've always thought that if anybody mounted a serious legal challenge, if there were a LeBron, okay, if there were a LeBron who had been famous since he was 14 years old and he wanted to go straight from high school to the pros the way LeBron did, I don't see how any court in the land could have stopped him from doing that. So I agree with you. It's going to be a handful of those blue chippers and diaper dandies, right, baby. But
nicely done.
It actually might help college basketball.
If the
players you're putting on the court are going to stay for 2 years or 3 years, we might have more Villanovas, okay? We might celebrate upperclassmen again, you know, the way we were. I was shocked. I agree with you. I was shocked the other night when I realized how many seniors Roy Williams was putting on the court. I'm thinking, what year do you think? You're right. I was thinking, what year is this, Roy?
Right.
But you know what? They look pretty damn good, and they looked pretty damn cohesive. And you talk about the Europeans. A lot of these European kids do show up at the NBA, and they're not NBA ready. And I think
they've been playing professional ball in some cases for several years. You and I understand this because we've covered sports and basketball practices and the like. When you get to the NBA, as currently constructed, they're not there to teach you the game. You get at most a 2-hour practice. That's on a practice day. On game days, you got a 40-minute shoot around, and that's it. And you know, when they're doing practices, full out practices on a Tuesday for a Wednesday night game, they're plotting for the defense that they're going to face the next night or simulating the game. They're not sitting there going, okay, let's work on your inside move. Here's how you go to your left. Here's how you go to your right. All that instructional stuff that you get in college is gone in the pros. And the guys show up, and they're not, you can't make them stay for 8 hours. They're professionals. They come in, they do practice for an hour and a half, and they get in their very rich, expensive cars, and they drive home. And this is the problem that a lot of guys who jump too soon to the NBA find, that they can't really develop because they sit at the end of the bench. When they do get into the game, they haven't had the experience going up against these guys, and they often look bad. And then they get their confidence is affected by it. And then, you know, they went from being a star. Look how we talk about going from being a star in college as a freshman to sitting at the end of the bench in the NBA. Well, how about going as a superstar in high school, where you have never had a red light at all in your high school career? You're that superior. To then sitting at the end of a bench in the NBA, and you're 18. How mature are you to be able to handle that kind of thing? So, I mean, I recognize they can't hold back the tide. You're right. Your analysis of that is spot on. But I don't know if this is going to be a great thing for the NBA. And I think college basketball may benefit more just because the resources that they that Duke, North Carolina, Michigan State, you know, all the rest of them will put towards trying to recruit one guy who's only going to pick one school. And then all the rest of that time is wasted. They can now spread out perhaps over guys who are more likely to stay in school. The NBA will start shifting to a lower age league. You'll have a lot more 18 versus 19 versus 20-year-olds playing than 31, 32, 33-year-olds playing. And, you know, we'll see ultimately if it's good for the game. Something tells me that it isn't. Something tells me, you know, if you stay 4 years and you come out when you're 22, you're still going to have a plenty long NBA career and you're going to be seasoned and ready to play. But that could be my age talking. You know, there are a lot of people younger that think otherwise.
One last thought about this. Again, with 18 and 19-year-old kids, you just don't know, okay? Cal sent a couple of one-and-done guards to the NBA. Malik Monk was one. The Charlotte took him. He's playing a little bit. He's averaging about 10 points a game. De'Aaron Fox, though, he goes to the Kings, and it looks like De'Aaron Fox is going to be a star. He adapted very quickly to the NBA. Malik Monk, the year before, did not. So you just never know. All right, we have another nice transition to Mr. LeBron James, who I don't know
didn't
whether
go to college.
Just, I don't know if last night was a one and done game from him, but the Lakers looked pretty damn good coming from behind last night to beat the Houston Rockets. And so I will ask you this, Mr. Album, is this a portent of things to come?
I think it is. And, you know, this is the part of LeBron James that just cannot be discounted. He will, I think somebody characterized in a piece I read this morning, grab the dog by the scruff of the neck and drag it across the line if he has to. That's what he's done with team after team that he's been on. And because LeBron James is capable of turning on that intensity in the middle of a season when most other teams just don't give that big a crap, and they just don't. You know, you can talk all you want, but we know the truth. Games in February are not going to elicit the same kind of effort from most NBA players as the games that are played in May and June. LeBron James, because he's desperate to make the playoffs, is going to have that effort, and he's going to bring it night after night, and you're going to get a game like last night, where Houston, a team that should beat the Lakers based on their record and their performance.
And the way Harden's been playing.
And the way Harden's been playing. And he still gets his 30 points, but that shows you how unimportant, you know, statistics are. They have a 19-point lead in the third quarter and don't hold on to it because LeBron decides, I'm going to just make this more meaningful to me and my guys than you guys are. And that's what he did. And he's going to have to do this over and over again. You know, for all the hosannas we're throwing at him for this game, he managed to get the Lakers to 500.
Yep.
They're 29 and 29. He's going to have to do this night after night. But yes, I think he's that singular that he can do it, Mike.
58 games, 29, 29. I'm doing my math here. 58. So that means there are 24 games left for the Lakers to become a real team. Before the playoffs and get themselves into the playoffs. But Mitch, what we saw last night with this comeback and not just the force of his talent, but the force of his basketball character, it was this: what fun it would be to have them in the playoffs, and what fun it would be, even if it went quickly, if they did play the Warriors in the first round. Because think about the fun we would have if they do play in the first round and somehow the Lakers got one of the first two games at Golden State.
And, oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, it's the same old narrative, different, you know, same church, different pew. He's with the Lakers now, but he's still going up against Curry and Durant and Draymond and those guys. What we saw last night was the possibilities that we saw with the Lakers, remember, before he got hurt. And suffered really the first serious injury of his career, and you were right spot on the day it happened. Don't say it's a minor thing because it was a month. Okay, it ended up being
more than a month. It was
more than
almost 6 weeks, five plus weeks.
And if he is healthy and he can rally this team. Listen, who doesn't want the Lakers to make the playoffs? Nobody does. I mean,
the LeBron haters don't want him to make. They want him to suffer his first missed playoff year in some time, and they want to make him pay for his avarice and his steering his own career. And there's plenty of haters out there like that who don't want to see LeBron James succeed. I think his bigger hurdle is the West. You know, this isn't the East where he's done this in years past with teams that don't have a whole lot of talent around him. But to get into the playoffs just isn't that hard in the East. In the West, the people fighting for the sixth, seventh, and eighth spots are pretty good teams. And, you know, and some of them end up in the ninth spot. So he's up against the Clippers, Utah, Portland, even Sacramento, San Antonio. These are teams that have been there before. And we're not even mentioning, you know, the top of the heap guys, the Oklahoma Cities and the Denvers and the Golden States, who you know that are going to be there. And, you know, they're locked in. So he's got his work cut out for him to do this every night. But I think he's capable of doing it. And I want to say something about the 19-point lead that disappears in the third quarter. Bob Ryan, our good friend and NBA guru, says the 19-point leads don't mean anything anymore. I mean, the 22-point leads don't mean anything. But they should. They should. They should. If you are in the third quarter and you've got that kind of a double-digit lead, think about what you have to do to lose it. And what you will frequently see, and this is what happens, and this is what I mean by February basketball, Mike. Guys just run down the court, and they don't feel like driving anymore. They don't feel like the other team puts up a defensive effort, and they go, ah, screw it, and they just shoot from the outside. That's what happens. That's how you lose 19-point leads, because you just pull up and chuck a three-pointer because you're just not that interested. You got to really blow something in a playoff game to blow a 19-point lead in the second half. But in a regular season game, 22-point lead, 24-point lead, doesn't mean anything, because all you have to do is exert some defensive effort, and the other team goes, ah, yeah, we got to play tomorrow night too. You know, I'm just going to pull up here and chuck this three-pointer. Oops, clanged off the rim. And that's what LeBron James has that these other guys don't have, is the ability to say, you know, we can catch these guys. We know they're 19 points ahead of us, but if we put up some actual effort in a midseason game, actual defense, we can catch them. And at least in one game, anyhow, he's proven to be true.
I was talking to Dave Roberts, manager of the Dodgers, who I really liked the other day, and he was talking about the day-to-dayness of baseball and how there has to be a mindset that every game matters, even if it's played in May or June or July. And he said, you want to be the kind of baseball team that when you're losing 6-1 in the sixth inning early in the season, you're still not going to piss away your next at-bat. And what we saw last night was LeBron did. He stuck a flag in the sand last night, and he said, we're going to win this game. And the beauty of the NBA is, for all the bad basketball that could be played at this time of year, we had three tremendous games last night. We had the Rockets and the Lakers. The Warriors just decided they weren't going to lose to a very young and talented Sacramento Kings team. And Steph ended up with 36, I think, and Durant had a big night too. And they win that one 125-23. And the team that still has the best record in the NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks, won a very nice game against the Celtics. And you know, my guy, our guy, Kyrie, scores 22 points. This, you always talk about this. 22 points on how many shots last night? 27, Mitch. Yeah. Okay? and his idea of a shot to win the game was to drive down the left-hand side of the lane and fling up an offhand left-handed shot. And I will say, I know I'm probably starting to preach to the choir on this. I believe that if he goes plays basketball somewhere else next year, the Boston Celtics are going to be better off without him.
Mm. Well, this much I can tell you, the Bucks are for real, and they have the kind of team that I'm talking about here, that actually enjoys playing regular season games. They like one another. You can see it in the
coach too, Mitch.
A good coach, good attitude.
Great. Yep.
Giannis is apparently, I don't know him, but apparently the kind of superstar that other guys can actually get behind, as opposed to thinking, you know, why do I want to make this guy, you know, historical career? He's an asshole on off the court. And with him as your centerpiece, and with Chris Middleton and some of these other guys, and the whole sort of, hey, no one's seen us before. You know, we're the party crashers here. Nobody thinks we can do it. They're 44-14.
Yep, yep.
And they're doing it. And you know, I really like this team. And I hope that they are able to take the next step in the playoffs so that we see a change of the balance of power
Mitch,
in the East, and we're not looking at the same teams.
Mitch, you're 1,000% right. I was thinking as I'm watching them against the Celtics last night, and this is nothing. I love the Warriors. I love this story. I love LeBron as a story. All that stuff, okay? Wouldn't it be great for the National Basketball Association if the Milwaukee Bucks actually won the championship this year?
Or at least got to the finals. And
we're
not watching the same teams play over and over again. And announce Giannis on a real national stage, not just an all-star game, and watch him play and get the experience to him and Middleton and other guys about what it's like to play on that big stage. Do I think that they would beat the Warriors? No, I don't. Not just because of talent, but because we all know in the NBA you got to climb step by step. You can't jump that ladder. When you first get to an NBA final, it's a learning experience, and frequently you're so dazzled by the lights you don't even know what's going on. But it certainly would lay a foundation for them because they are the kind of team that can go on. Now, you mentioned...
And by the way, I just want to tell you, because he's a friend of yours, every time I look at a Bucks box score... And I see G Hill, which is George Hill. Yeah. But when I see G Hill, I'm thinking,
Grant Hill.
God, is Grant still playing? did he hook on with one?
If he could, he would.
With one more G.
You mentioned Dave Roberts, the Manny Machado saga,
yep.
And of course he last played for the Dodgers, has finally come to a rich end. 10 years, $300 million to play with the also ran San Diego Padres. Now, I understand they have what many consider is the best farm system in the game right now. I understand they have a couple of players on their roster who are okay, although I think they overpaid for Hosmer and some other people. But $300 million, 10 years to put Machado, at least he's going to be out of the thick of things this year and probably next year. He's just going to be a stat guy at most. What do you make of this deal?
I think, and this is what I wrote the other day, okay? I understand all the things wrong with this deal, okay? And it smacks of the Alex Rodriguez deal when he went to the Texas Rangers and they paid him so much money that they couldn't pay enough players enough money to make a really good baseball team. And within 3 years, they couldn't wait to get rid of him and get out from under this contract. This might happen with Manny Machado. Here's what I think about Machado as a player. In so many ways, he is a more impactful player than Bryce Harper is because of the position he plays. And it doesn't matter whether the position is third base or shortstop. If you're an infielder, unless you're Mookie Betts or Mike Trout, you're going to influence the game more than an outfielder is going to. So I really think, looked at their two talents and thought, okay, these are the same guy. But if you're the Padres, and I looked this up, Mitch, they have won more than 77 games once in the last 11 years. They have had one winning season in the last 11 years. They have made the World Series twice in the last 35 years. One, they lost to one of the great teams of all time, the 84 Tigers, and in 98, they got swept by the New York Yankees. All that stuff, okay? But a part of me believes this is what free agency can do. If you're the Padres, you spent $300 million the other day to try to give your fans hope that your team is, if not going to be relevant this year, is going to be relevant soon. And so I actually salute the Padres for doing this, even though I think these contracts are often folly, and I see where he's got an out after 5 years. We'll see where they are. But if they do get relevant, and they say they do make the playoffs next year or the year after, then this is what free agency is designed to do. And I salute the Padres for taking their shot.
Well, it goes against the modern day signing, which tends to be more like, I want to go someplace where I'm going to win. And at 26, maybe Manny Machado figures, I don't have to go someplace where I'm going to win this year. I can win 2 years from now or 3 years from now. He did have, and his agent negotiated, the most important part of this, which is an out after 5 years.
Yeah.
And he's going to be 31 in 5 years, and if he continues to be the kind of player that he is, he can probably demand, given what the market's going to be, a bigger contract for the remaining 10 years of his life. And he may walk away from San Diego just when they're getting good. And he may say, well, now I want to go be with the Yankees or something like that. So, that part, I'm like, really? You're going to give him $150 million guaranteed, and then he can walk away from you? And that's the deal that they actually made. But again, beggars can't be choosers kind of thing.
But is he going to get better money somewhere else? And I wonder the way the market
is going. Oh, at that point, why wouldn't he? If he has these numbers?
Because here's the thing about these contracts, Mitch. Now, you look, in 2000, Alex Rodriguez and Scott Boras broke the record with a $252 million 10-year contract that had a 7-year out, okay? That's 19 years ago. And now the world record-breaking contract, 19 years later, is $300 million for 10 years. So if the market changed that much, you'd think it would have been $400 million, considering the fact of what Alex Rodriguez made in 2000.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. But there was a big dip in the middle there, and then what was accused to be collusion, and then they started rising up again. I still think 5 years from now, given the way digital is going and all the rest, there'll be so much money in baseball that a $40 million a year guy is not going to be.
But just remember,
unusual.
Mitch, a year ago when we were talking about Harper hitting the market, people were talking about a $400 million contract. And now, we talked about this the other day, it's almost like the Phillies, if they are still the front runner for him, are bidding against themselves against Harper. And if you're bidding against yourself, how high do you want to go just so Scott Boras can break another record? And before
right.
well, we leave this,
he's bidding against Machado.
Right. But I'll ask you this, okay? Why does it matter if they break a record over money that won't affect a single day of the rest of Bryce Harper's life? And shouldn't he, the talent, not the agent, be looking hard at what he thinks is the best setting for him to play his baseball prime?
Yeah. You know, we quote North Dallas 40, every time you call it a business, I call it a game. Every time I call it a game, you know. Well, you know, everybody says, the players always say, I want to win, I want to win, I want to win. But what frequently is demonstrated by both them and their agents is, I want to win the salary game. I want to, you know, I have to be the highest paid player in the sport because I'm the best player in the sport. And you prove you're the best player
but
in the sport.
But he's not the best. Neither one of them is the best player in the sport.
Right. But go tell them that. Go tell them that because, you know, if they really believed it, they wouldn't be trying to beat everybody else's contract. And it remains to be seen that they're playing games now and Bryce Harper is not in a uniform.
Yep.
So I didn't think that would happen. All right. Time for our parting shots. Mike, take us away.
Somehow, Mitch, it is now 39 years since the most famous game ever played by any team in the history of American sports, and the most important, on a Friday night in Lake Placid, New York in 1980. That was a night a bunch of American college kids, coached by Herb Brooks, pulled off what will be known forever as the Miracle on Ice by beating what was then called the Soviet Union, and which was supposed to have the best hockey team in this world. That was the night Al Michaels said, "Do you believe in miracles?" Yes, as the last few seconds came off the clock. And my East Boston friend Michael Arruzioni's goal with 10 minutes exactly left had stood up and the United States kids had won 4-3. It was the politics of the moment that contributed to this extraordinary sports moment because of what the Russians had recently done in Afghanistan. But more than that, it was the sheer improbability of what happened that night, a couple of weeks after the Soviets had beaten these same American college kids 10-3 in an exhibition game at Madison Square Garden. I'll never forget that game or the snowy night afterward in Lake Placid when you'd walk down the street and see bands of Americans stopping and singing God Bless America on street corners or the national anthem. I've been lucky enough to see a lot of remarkable days and nights in my career. Never one close to that.
ESPN did the right thing by canceling its college game day appearance at Syracuse this weekend. The pregame show was scheduled to do its thing ahead of the highly anticipated Syracuse-Duke game, but tragic news came out of the Syracuse program this week, and I don't mean a shoe blowing out on a player. Jim Boeheim, Syracuse's coach, was involved in a late-night car crash that killed another man. The details at this time are still up in the air, and all anyone is really saying is the standard thoughts and prayers for the victim's family, and out of respect, nothing else will be said. It has to be an enormous burden for Boeheim if he was not at fault, and given that the man had left his car due to a breakdown and was standing on the side of the road when Boeheim's car hit him, that's entirely possible. On the other hand, Boeheim's burden is nowhere near the one that man's family now faces. And as a result, a raucous, crowd-whooping pregame show on Syracuse's campus would be wholly inappropriate, and ESPN had the foresight to recognize that. It will be strange enough seeing Boeheim directing players from the bench with all this going on. Nobody needs a pregame pep rally to make it even more bizarre. That's going to wrap things up for today's show. We do the Sports Reporters Podcast every Monday and Friday, so we'll be back in just a couple of days. Tell your friends if they haven't heard of it before or if they remember the TV show and say, oh, it's a podcast form that we're on twice a week, and you can find us anywhere you find popular podcasts, including radio.com. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying have a terrific weekend.